Right. We are in Genesis, and we're studying the most important event this morning, the most important event in Isaac's life. And it's interesting, the most monumental events of Isaac's life are things that happen to him, not things that he does proactively. And I'll say a little bit more about his passivity later. But this is one of the most important stories in the Old Testament. And we really can't understand who Isaac is and what his role is among the patriarchs without this story. We have to admit, it's also a horrifying story, and we will definitely misunderstand it if we only read it with 21st century eyes. There's much to say about that particular part of it, but we don't really have time. But let me just tell you that this command of God to Abraham, it wasn't strange. He didn't receive it as crazy. And, you know, it certainly didn't make sense to him, given the promise that he had received from God. But the command itself was not unthinkable on the surface. Abraham did not hear from God, "Hey, go murder your son." That's not what he heard. He heard he was to offer up his son Isaac to God as a sacrifice. And you're thinking, well, what's the difference? But remember, again, this is not the 21st century. This is happening 4,000 years ago. And before we judge those people as, oh, those people are just barbaric, I could come up with a pretty horrendous list of things that human beings are doing to one another over the last 100 years that are every bit as bad as this. So I'm not sure we've really changed all that much. Here's what every person on the planet believed at this time. That every family owed a debt of sin to their God. And they all had different gods, but they all believed that they owed a debt to their God. Their God had to be appeased. And it was a big debt, a debt that required a big sacrifice. And the most valuable possession of any family was the firstborn. Child sacrifice was pretty common. And Abraham did not have God's law. He didn't have the Bible. He only knew little by little about who God was as God revealed himself. So this idea did not come to Abraham as crazy. It was, however, confusing because God had promised to make him into a great nation through his son Isaac. And so let's look at this story, and let's look at it from two directions. Let's look at it through the eyes of a father, and then through the eyes of a son. So we'll begin looking at it through the eyes of a father. You know, last week we discussed how God promised to make Abraham into the father of a great nation. And, you know, from there, everything in the story of Genesis leads up to the birth of Isaac. Once God makes him that promise, everything then points to, okay, well, you've got to have a son. And that has to be a son through your wife, Sarah. The problem is, they're old, really old. And it doesn't seem possible. But Sarah finally becomes pregnant and gives birth to Isaac. Things are great. Things are going well for Abraham. He's wealthy. His family is prospering. But after some years, God says something to him that literally turns his world upside down. Take your son, your only son whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on the mountain I will show you. Now, I think in this story in Abraham, we see a lot of different things, but I really want to focus on two. Two things that we see in Abraham. We see a love for God that leads to obedience, and we see an incredible faith in God, a trust in God. Now let's first think about his love. We know from the text, Abraham loves Isaac. It says it clearly. Take your son, your only son, whom you love. I mean, Isaac, he has two sons, and he loves them both. But Ishmael is gone at this point. He's no longer with the family. And Isaac is his only son by his wife, Sarah. Isaac is the son of God's promise. And Abraham loves Isaac. But Isaac is not Abraham's only love. Abraham loves God. And it's not said directly in the text, but we know it from his story. Beginning in chapter 12, we see that Abraham, he loves God, he believes God, he worships God, he obeys God. He doesn't do any of those things perfectly, but really at the core of his life, you could say those things are true about him. And so Abraham is now confronted with competing loves. His love for Isaac, his love for God. And he has to make a choice based upon those loves. And this is something that we all do. We all do it whether we're thinking about it or not. We all make choices based upon our loves. And sometimes we find our loves at odds with one another. The great theologian St. Augustine, he wrote in his book, The City of God, this is 426 AD, he said, "But living a just and holy life requires one to be capable of an objective and impartial evaluation of things, to love things, that is to say, in the right order, so that you do not love what is not to be loved, or fail to love what is to be loved." So he talked about how we have to order our loves, and we need to do so properly, rightly. Jesus talks about the same thing. That's where Augustine got it. He didn't think it up first. He got it from Jesus. Jesus says, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple." Now, we know from other things Jesus says that he doesn't literally want us to hate anyone, but he's using exaggeration here to point out that our love for him has to be preeminent. It's Jesus' way of saying, rightly order your loves. Get them in the right order. And so Abraham has to make a choice, and that's why this text is so hard. But ultimately, Abraham is driven by a singular love, his love for God. And so the next morning, he packs his donkey and he sets out on his journey. Us, all of us, without exception, are sacrificing for the things that we love. All parents sacrifice their children. Is what are we sacrificing for? Answer that question and you'll know who or what you love most. What are you sacrificing for? Abraham knew the answer to that question. And again, that propelled him to get up early the next morning and set off for the mountain God would show him. Now, also in this story, we see Abraham's trust in God. And obviously these two things, love, trust, they're related. It's hard to love when you don't trust. But they're not exactly the same thing. They're a bit different. Abraham trusts God. And this is the God who said this directly to him. "Your wife, Sarah, will bear you a son, and you will call him Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. So God's promise completely depended upon Isaac growing up and having descendants. And Abraham knew this. But now he has this command from God to go and sacrifice him. So Abraham, he doesn't know, how can these things both be true? How could he know? But he trusts God enough to take steps of obedience, even though he doesn't know. Now, we know from where we sit that God never intended for Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. But he didn't know that, or at least we know he wasn't sure about that. What did Abraham believe? I think we can discern from the text that we can say for sure, Abraham trusted God to keep his promise about Isaac. Abraham believed that Isaac somehow was going to come home with him. Look at the text, verse 5. Abraham said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." Now, you know, we write a lot of superfluous words in our culture because we, you know, well, you, some of you can type 60 or plus words a minute. I can type like 6, but regardless, we write a lot of things we probably shouldn't, actually. But in the ancient world, writing was very difficult. You didn't use superfluous words. This is not a throwaway line in the text. We're being told, we're being let, you know, this is foreshadowing, drawing attention to Abraham's faith. Somehow he believes Isaac is coming home with him. Well, what did Abraham think God was going to do? The text doesn't tell us, but the book of Hebrews says this: by faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead. So Abraham perhaps believed Isaac was somehow going to be raised from the dead. Maybe he thought God would provide a substitute as the sacrifice for Isaac. And that is actually what happened. Verses 7 and 8, this is really the poignant part of the story. "Father, yes, my son, the fire and the wood are here, but where's the lamb for the burnt offering?" "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." Abraham trusted God that Isaac was coming back with him. We don't know exactly that he knew how that was going to happen, but he believed God. He trusted God's word. He trusted his promise. So in Abraham, we see love for God. We see his trust, his faith in God that led him to obey even when he could not clearly see how the Lord was going to make it all work. And that's a great word for us, because see, we want to know. We want answers. We want clarity, and we actually think we deserve answers. Abraham didn't think he deserved answers. Are you willing to obey when you don't have answers? Are you going to be faithful to God when you don't have clarity? That's a question for all of us to ponder. Now let's conclude this by looking at this story through the eyes of a son. You know, there's not much here that helps us do that. As I mentioned, Isaac is known as the passive patriarch. In Genesis, Abraham and Jacob and Joseph, they have well-developed stories, and they are the center of those stories. They're the center of attention. And by contrast, Isaac Lee is having all these things happen around him and to him. And this story presents maybe the most passive picture of all of Isaac. And scholars, since the beginning of the New Testament, have pointed out that really to understand Isaac and to understand his role as a patriarch, we have to understand him in light of the larger biblical story. And here's what I mean. To understand Isaac, you have to look at Jesus. You're only going to understand Isaac and the whole point of his life by understanding Jesus. Consider these parallels. Isaac is called Abraham's only son. Jesus is God's only begotten son. Isaac was offered up on a mountain. Jesus was offered up on a mountain. Isaac took a donkey on his journey. Jesus rode a donkey into Jerusalem just days before his crucifixion. Two men accompanied Abraham and Isaac. Two men accompanied Jesus when he was on the cross. Both Isaac and Jesus had three-day journeys. Isaac carried wood for the sacrifice on his back up the mountain. Jesus carried a wooden cross on his back up Calvary. The ram was stuck in this thorny thicket by his horns, and he became the sacrifice for Isaac. Jesus wore a crown of thorns and became the sacrifice for all humankind. Isaac's life is a type of Christ. He was a passive participant in the most important event of his life. But in doing so, he pointed people to Jesus, perhaps more clearly than any other person in the Old Testament. And during his life, he never understood it. Like he never knew. He was never able to look back and go, oh, well, now I see. He never knew what was his greatest achievement. Now, let me ask you, and I think this is a tough question. Maybe you won't, but I do. Would you or could you be okay with that? Or do you believe that your life only matters to the degree that you're the one who makes it all happen? That's a tough question. Are you willing to go through life just being faithful to God and not even really knowing? What is God doing? I'll say for me, I have resolved this question long ago. Someone else can have the attention, others can get the accolades and notoriety. In my life and ministry, if I can just quietly and humbly point people to Jesus, I'm good with that. Other people can have the other stuff. I really don't care. And if you want to understand me and you want to understand the kind of community I'm hoping God makes here, you need to understand that.